fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. The season is pretty much done, but there's plenty going on behind the scenes, both here at Wembley and at football clubs up and down the country. It's actually the busiest time of the year, and we wanted to capture a slightly different angle on all of it as we go into the final big games this weekend with non-league finals day. However, to do so, it looks like we might have a two-part show this week with our second set of guests available early Friday morning to hopefully allow a Friday PM release of their contribution. So keep an eye out for that. That doesn't mean, though, that your ears get time off for good behaviour. We have plenty to entertain and inform, starting with insight into the FA Trophy final between FC Halifax Town and Gateshead. The focus is more on the latter, as we speak to former media man at the club, now local journalist, who's been reporting on the Heed for over five decades. It's great to chat to players, the managers, the chairman and the like, but with big games like this, it's the fans that have lived and breathed the club, often for longer, and for whom Wembley appearances are such a big thing. Jeff Bowron knows more about Gateshead FC than most, for sure, and it's great to hear what Sunday's final means to him, as well as plenty of insight into the player availability issues that Gateshead will face for that game. Rounding up the week's news, including last week's National League, National League South and National League North playoff finals, is Matt Badcock, editor-at-large with the non-league paper. There's also much debate around the league allocations that were out this week and a number of new managerial appointments too. So there is still plenty to come. Time to sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Okay, so let's chat FA Trophy, perhaps for some two less fancy sides in a final. Nearer the bottom end of the National League for most of the season, but finished mid-table. But FC Halifax Town and Gateshead had certainly earned their place in this season's Wembley final, progressing whilst also ensuring safety in that top tier. And it'll be a treat from all that are there to watch, I know, because they're two sides that want to play some football. I wanted to do something slightly different as well and get some insight into what it all means to be in this trophy final. So I'm genuinely pleased and honoured to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show North East journalist Mr. Jeff Bowron. Welcome back, Jeff.
Oh, hi, Tim. Good to speak, Matt.
Well, it's good to get you back because for so many years you were the head of media. I think you're the only person of media at Gateshead, keeping everybody up to date, writing match reports for the non-league paper, updating outlets like ourselves and all things Heed. What an up and down time it was as well for Gateshead, but they do seem to be back on the up now.
Yeah, it's certainly been a roller coaster, and that's. This season's been incredible, really. It's looked dead and buried at Christmas, and then I've had a fantastic 2023. Got up to 14th in the National League, well away from the relegation, and obviously got to Wembley and a couple of penalty shootouts in the quarterfinal and semi-final. So, yeah, it's typical Gateshead, really.
Well, it's typical Gateshead, but also, I mean, you regularly still write for the Chronicle up there, among many other outlets. You've got a firm grip on the pulse at Gateshead, but quite a season to be sporting any North East sides if you're playing black and white.
Well, that's right. Newcastle getting to Wembley and then Gateshead getting to Wembley the same year. Incredible, really. I'm just hoping that Gateshead do a bit better than Newcastle did at Wembley.
And I think, when Gateshead were last at Wembley, I think you oversaw all the media that last time. Wembley for the playoff final some 9 years ago, there was something like, I think, almost 15,000 North East fans there on that day. Probably not so many for this trophy final, but I'm looking, Newcastle playing at home on Friday and Monday. Are there going to be a fair few Georgies also making the trip to support Gateshead?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Back in 2014, the Conference Premier final against Cambridge, obviously we lost 2-1. The crowd was just under 20,000, but it was actually, you've flattered us there with your figures there, because it was only 7,000, there were 7,000 Gateshead fans there and 12 Cambridge. So given that it's the FA Trophy on Sunday, I was a little bit concerned that just how many would go, but It's almost up to 5,000, which might not sound brilliant to a lot of people, but when you've got a hardcore of maybe 800, 900, and you're the second lowest tennisers in the National League, then it's fivefold. That isn't five, sixfold. That, so you've got to be pretty happy with that. There's not that much of a crossover between Newcastle fans and Gateshead. A lot of people living in Gateshead obviously support Newcastle. What we would like is that support against it as well, you know. So there will be some go down, and the fact that Newcastle are playing Leicester on Monday, there was a worry that it was going to be put back from the Saturday to Sunday, and that would have really hit things, you know. But yeah, it's on the Monday, so there will be some Newcastle fans coming down, and yeah, there's a bit of a buzz about the place.
I'd imagine so. I haven't heard of any bronze being made yet of Mike Williamson. And the North East has had its fair share of football legends as well. But his achievements, they've got to be up there with the best. And he's just also such an unassuming bloke.
Yeah, he is, yeah. he's very level-headed, that's for sure. What a job he's done. Yeah, took me to the playoffs in the National League North and then obviously won the title last year. 99 goals, 92 points. And then this season, got them to safety when, as I said before, looked dead and buried halfway stage. And then, to cap it all, got to the FA Trophy final for the first time in the club's history. So if he can pull it off, especially under the circumstances, we haven't touched on that yet, i.e. Gates have only got 13 players for Sunday. If he can do it with that, then, yeah, he should be a statue outside the International Stadium.
Well, yeah,
I doubt the council would pay for it, by the way.
Williamson, he's still on the player roster, isn't he? But he's not available for the final because I think he's one of those that are injured. I was going to say he's got quite a selection headache, but he hasn't, has he? It's availability headache. Is it right?
The team virtually picks itself, Tim. I mean, it's just incredible. There's 12 players out for various reasons. There's 4 injured, 3 cup tied, 3 loans have gone back and 4 ineligible. So that basically leaves 13 players, 2 of which are goalkeepers. So on the bench you're going to have Aston Villa, Loney, Philippe Marshall, who's 20, and then you've got Will Harris, young striker, 22, and then you'll have, I would imagine you have 3 academy players who haven't played or have hardly played. And then I wouldn't have thought they put 5 on just to make the 7 off. Well, they might do, I suppose. But yeah, I doubt any in the 54-year history of the FA Trophy side's got in with such a meagre squad. I kind of believe it, you know. But what I will say is the starting 11 is decent.
It is a strong 11. And you know, with Mike, everybody be up for it, including those guys on the bench. But, I mean, you mentioned that ineligible players as well. And it's quite quirky, isn't it? Because aren't all 4 of those unavailable because they weren't signed on in time for the semi-final?
For the semi-final, it was, I think it was 14 players. For the quarter-final, it was 14 players and 2 had 2 goalkeepers on the bench. Rob Elliott, who used to be at Newcastle, he's a technical director. He was on the bench. Obviously, he wasn't going to play because we already had another keeper. So, absolute bare bones. And then it was the same. They had to play a young academy lad, start with him in the semi-final against Bond. He lasted an hour. It did all right, actually. Only small as well. And then we brought somebody on who's perennially injured, Elliot Forbes, utility player, and he went off after a quarter of an hour, so he can't play at Wembley either. So it's just been an unbelievable situation. It really is. So if they get injuries during the game, then there will be a problem, you know.
Yeah, and you had Ethan Pye as well, didn't you, from Stockport County until pretty much the end of the season. But he was recalled as well on loan. I mean, we always look for potential stories in these games, and that one almost sounds like it's setting them up. But another one, Aaron Martin, likely because of the availability, likely to be leading the attack, I guess, for Gateshead. He spent some time at Halifax on loan previously before joining Gateshead in the summer.
He did last season.
One to watch.
Well, he came to Gateshead in the summer from Harrogate Town, and he's been injured quite a bit, and then he's been ill. And he basically took 8.5 months to score a goal, would you believe? 25 games, not all of them starting, obviously. Mm. And then he finally scored at Eastleigh, 2 good finishes, and then claimed the match ball with a hat-trick and looking at the video, you can't even see he's touched the ball. It was an Adam Campbell shot. Must have, like, grazed his bootlace. So anyway, he got a hat trick on that. And then Williamson just put him on the bench the next game. But with Marcus Dinanga not available, one of the ones not available, he's the usual number nine, then Aaron Martin will lead the line. Now, I will say he has finished the season well, and he's played at Wembley before. He played for Harrogate in the playoff final to get into the Football League.
So there is a potential story there. And, of course, he would have arrived in the summer, coinciding with the departure of Macaulay Langstaff, going off to join Notts County, and what a season he's had there.
Oh, unbelievable, Langstaff. I mean, he was brilliant for Gateshead, you know. He scored 32 goals. Then he's gone up there, he scored 42 in 46 games. Phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And Kedwin Scott as well, good player. He got 26 goals for Gateshead last season. So to lose them both, well, obviously, it was a hammer blow. And then they brought Martin in, and they brought a guy called Lewis Knight in from Notts County, and he's been injured all season. He's played a handful of games because of a hip injury.
It's just been one thing after another.
So it's a good story, and the way it's turned out is just phenomenal, really.
Yeah, to even reach this stage, yeah, a great end to the season in the National League. When I think they won 8 of their last 11 games, didn't they?
And that's right.
That promotion, as you mentioned, back to the National League at the end of last season. FA Trophy final at Wembley this. So win or lose Sunday, can Gateshead get back to the heights of challenging again for promotion to the Football League?
Well, that's a tough one, isn't it? Because their budgets was in bottom three last year. It's going to go up next year, as far as I know, a little bit. So you'd have to get your recruitment right. You'd have to hold on to your best players, get the loan system right. I mean, Macclesfield did it, didn't they? But it's getting harder by the year because you're getting all these bigger clubs coming down, and especially the Wrexham situation. And obviously, you've got Notts County, Chesterfield. Oldham will be on the up again. And then you've got Hartlepool locally coming down as well. So it is difficult to do it now, isn't it? But it's not impossible, especially to get into the playoffs and that and kick on. And but I mean, it took Gateshead 84 years to get to Wembley. And then I couldn't believe they got there in the first place for the conference final. And now, would you believe they've done it twice in a decade?
They take that long incredible. To get there, and you're there both times. Isn't it quite impressive?
Yeah, I know. Well, I've been reporting on them for 38 years, and I've been watching for 54 years. And if you told me, well, any time virtually until the last decade that they would get to Wembley, unbelievable. Although, to be fair, they have been close a few times in the FA Trophy before. Been like eight times in the quarterfinal, and this year was the third time in the semi-final, you know. So I suppose they have been close, but it seems believing.
It is. And we've seen, you know, various games like the National League playoff final last week going all the way down to penalties. And Gateshead had penalty wins against Farsley, Celtic and Barnet the last two rounds to get here. And I think they scored 8 kicks from 9. So a shootout, I guess, isn't going to worry Gateshead, but I guess also knowing the way that Mike Williamson likes to set his stall out, depending on the availability of players, they're not going to sit back. It's going to be an attacking front foot type of game.
Oh, they're playing exactly the same way. What he has them so well drilled that they all know their roles and they'll all just come in and play the same way. You know, you'll have Carl Magne as a defender, 34, he'll be playing in midfield because there's nobody else. He doesn't normally play there. He's like a backup defender. It's his third final, actually, at Wembley. He's lost the other two, so hopefully third time lucky. So everybody will slot in, and they're all good players in there, don't get me wrong. And I wouldn't be a major surprise if they pulled it off, like, you know. But obviously they're missing half the team that got the 8 wins out of 11. They're not there now, you know, or not available. So it's obviously going to impact. But as I said, the start 11's good, and there's a lot of good players in there, and oh, they'll go for it, yeah. I mean, there's no way they would sit back. It's not in their way, you know. They'll play out from the back and play good football, and hopefully that'll be enough.
We talk about, you know, Hollywood being interested in non-league football, but it already sounds like a great hour and a half of a film to watch at the cinema, and we haven't even played the final yet. You've given us great insight, as I expected, into the Gateshead camp, but have you got any knowledge of the FC Halifax set-up and their preparations? I said they had a good midweek friendly win against an Hibernian development squad.
Yeah, they did. Well, I know they've got one or two injuries, nothing like what, you know, Gates would have. I think they'll have at least six subs. Their main striker's not playing, is he? I'm not sure how you pronounce his surname, Manny Dizavrovi. Suspended, isn't he?
Yeah.
There's a couple of lads at the back home play and a midfielder. But they finished the season well. I think they only lost 1 out of 15.
Yeah.
We won 8 out of 11, they lost 1 out of 5. That's pretty impressive. They've got the fifth best defensive record. And Gateshead didn't score against them this season. Could be 2-0 at the Shane, 0-0 at Gateshead. And the goalkeeper, Sam Johnson, who had a very brief spell at Gateshead when he was at Port Vale and didn't really come off, you know, and he ended up going to Halifax and he's been there ever since. He's the joint top clean sheets in the... he's got the joint top clean sheets in the National League. So...
See,
both teams going in good nick.
I knew you'd have the insight as well that I needed for the Halifax setup. What I like as well is, you know, we mentioned Mike Williamson. You know, he was been at the club since 2018 as a player. But yeah, Chris Millington in charge at FC Halifax was assistant to Pete Wild for a number of years before taking over the mantle. It's nice to have managers that have got some continuity with their club that reach a final.
Yeah, it is. And I think he's a similar type, you know. He's a good tactician. He'll have done his homework and it'll be a good battle of... Tactically, it'll be a good battle between the two of them. I would imagine Gateshead, but even though they've got all these players missing, they'll be better than what they have been in the previous two. Well, I would hope they're better than what they were in the... Certainly at the Shea, they were poor that night. A couple of errors cost them, you know. And then it was just a stalemate up here. Not a great game. But I think... has the makings of a decent game on Sunday. And Millington, yeah, he's done a good job. He was getting a lot of stick, wasn't he, off their fans when they were struggling, and then he's turned it round just like Williamson has, and seems a good bloke as well, so it's all set up nicely.
Yeah, it looks great for Sunday. We can probably have a good guess about how the players and management are going to prepare for Sunday. What about you? I guess you're working and covering the game.
Yeah, I'm going down on the Saturday and then based at Watford a couple of days and then come back up on the Monday, you know. So, yeah, working on the game, covering it for the local press up here. Because obviously I'm a freelancer. I'm not actually linked to the club now, but still running all the press box, by the way. But, yeah, so I'll be working. There'll be a couple of us there. Then Raging Castle will be down there. And yeah, it should be interesting, you know. It's as I said before, it's all set up and I think the first goal will be massive, you know. It is in any game, isn't it? But yeah. I think if Gates can get ahead, Halifax will have to come out a little bit and it'll make it more of an open game, you know.
Yeah, well, it's always an exciting day out at Wembley, even more so when it's a club, as you say, you've had so many decades affiliation with. Jeff, we could talk forever, and I know you've got preparation to do ahead of the weekend. So thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and best of luck at the weekend.
Tim. I'll just end on one thing, though, Tim. It's the 70th anniversary this year of Gateshead reaching the FA Cup quarter-final in 1953. When they got beat by Bolton Wanderers 1-0 at home. So that's a nice omen, isn't it?
It looks a great omen. It's always great to get you on. Jeff Barron, thank you very much.
I have nothing to say to you when I see you on Sunday, and I've told you everything. I'll figure something, don't worry.
Time to head on over then to Non-League Paper Towers. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. It's editor-at-large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. I see Matt Badcock. Obviously, my phone introduces you as Matt Badco. I'm not sure it's telling me something.
Hyacinth Bouquet. Yeah.
It has reached, that's a
blast from the Sunday Pass, isn't it?
Wow, it's one of those cultural references that's not wasted on me, but one of the sort of cultural references that I normally make in a room full of people, and everybody just looks at me blankly, or maybe they just, you know, they take pity on me. We had a very exciting end to a very exciting season in the National League with the National League playoff final at Wembley between Chesterfield and Notts County. Notts obviously running out 4-3 winners on penalties after the game had finished 2-2 after extra time. That doesn't really tell the whole story, does it? You were there. I think most who saw it felt maybe Chesterfield were perhaps a better side in the day, but few would deny Notts promotion on the season that they've had.
Yeah, I think that kind of sums it up quite neatly, really. It could have been a very different story for Notts County, but kind of, I think if they were going to go up, it was always going to be this kind of way, with kind of drama and madness sort of towards the end. You know, how this season has been, how the playoffs have been, and Chesterfield, yeah, they sort of kind of almost got a feeling with the fans of 10 minutes to go. They were 1-0 up to an early penalty. Notts hadn't started well, just didn't seem to really kind of settle. And sort of towards the end, sort of last 10 minutes, the sort of Chesterfield fans, where we were in the press, on the press benches, we were kind of on that side of Chesterfield fans, and they were kind of going mad around us. And sort of, you kind of felt they thought maybe they were just about to get there, as you would have done. And suddenly John Bostock whips in a clever free kick at the near post that squeezes in, and we're into extra time, and off we go again. Chesterfield led again, and not to get it back, and then you go to penalties and all the drama of that, and then a penalty to win. Bostock comes up, drives a Panenka, hits the bar, and you think, oh my goodness, it's all just, you know, twist after twist as this whole season's been. And then in a very sort of, as football often throws up these storylines, up comes Kedwin Scott, who obviously had his penalty saved by Ben Foster in the thrilling game against Wrexham on Easter Monday that kind of swung the title to Wrexham's way. He steps up for the decisive kick and smashes Notts County back into the Football League. And it was 107 points. We've said it before. So much has been written, said about it. Two up, three up, all this kind of stuff. But really, you know, 107 points, the only losing three games, I think it was, in the whole season. And, you know, imagine if they hadn't gone up after that Luke Williams aside. You know, they were fantastic to watch, brilliant football inside, and, you know, had pushed Wrexham all the way. I think overall, you know, the fact that Wrexham and Notts were so far ahead of everybody this season, I think they've had the right outcome.
Mm, yeah, and you know, we always talk about penalties being difficult on the players, but when you've got such a tight situation in that game, you know, you come back into it. It takes nerves of steel and confidence in your actions to win through. And Luke Williams making that goalkeeper substitution in the dying seconds of extra time, it's going to go down as a masterpiece of tactical nous, so also balls of steel.
It's definitely one of those. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? It'd be interesting to know what kind of the Chesterfield players and kind of thinking as it. When it happens, because it was, as you say, right at the end of extra time, Archie Mayer comes on. You know, he had time for a few sort of touches of the ball, and it's kind of always sort of like a nerve-wracking moment when a goalkeeper just come off the bench at the end to kind of has to still actually do something within the game. You know, obviously it's not all the way through, but he's just had a few back passes and kicks to sort of deal with, nothing major, but. And then he saved twice in the shootout, and it's kind of it's brilliant mind games. We've seen it before. I remember Holland did it in the one of the major tournaments of, I don't know, and some so often, you know, you see something a little bit different, and it's all the psychological side of it. And did that have a bearing? Difficult to know really on what the Chesterfield players thought. Maybe they're probably just going up and taking a penalty kick against a keeper anyway. So, but it worked. It paid off. It was kind of sort of sat in on lots of Luke Williams's press conferences this season, and he's fascinating. I've been up to Medellin to sit down and have a chat with him. He's a really fascinating guy, and you can sort of see how much he thinks about the game, and how much he loves. Loves coaching and talking about it, and some of the ideas he puts across, and I can sort of imagine him coming up with that idea and then going through with it, and it certainly worked and paid off. Fair play to him.
I Rochdale and Hartlepool much to live up to replace Wrexham and Notts County in the National League next term.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's going to be an interesting league next year with. Obviously Wrexham and Notts gone now, and as I just said, how far ahead of everybody they were, and how good they both were. You know, as it stands now, obviously there's lots of summer business to do, but Chesterfield will be kind of, you know, thinking that they can they can arguably start out as favourites and can go from there. But it's going to be a fascinating season as we, you know, Rochdale coming down, Hartlepool, obviously John Askey, the manager there, knows the league, and Hartlepool know the league, and the fans do and know what it's all about. Rochdale's obviously going to be a new experience, and so often it's how they adapt to that and kind of get their heads around non-league and what it's all about early on.
Yeah, and interesting what you say about John Askey coming down with Hartlepool, because I see Jimmy McNulty has been formally given the head coach job at Rochdale. He had a couple of spells as interim boss last term, including the final games in the Football League. I think he's 38 years old. He's spent the last 8 seasons with the club as a player, so he knows the club and he knows the supporters, which is always a great thing. But I'm not sure he knows non-league, and for me, that would be a worry.
I think we always say, you know, how important that that sort of non-league knowledge is, and it's kind of the sort of the intricacies of it, the sort of, you know, the understanding of, you know, different clubs, what they bring, and different everything that goes with it. But then on the other sort of flip side, you then say, look at Luke Williams. This is obviously his first season in the National League. And yes, he has sort of a great sort of base to be building from, and a great team, and obviously added brilliantly last summer. But, you know, you could clearly see how he sort of got his head around it very quickly. And see, Phil Parkinson, it was his second season. You could see a bit of that in the first season again. Sort of, you know, if you're a bright enough mind, I think you will. You know, they do work it out. You know, they understand it. And I think now possibly teams coming down off it more so probably from the supporters is kind of, I think there's a bit more realism when they're coming into the National League.
I think this season
really what it's about as well.
The profile of the National League has been so high because of everything that's been going on as well. I think people know a lot more about the game and the standard and the fact that it isn't going to be a pushover.
I don't get a sense as much these days that fans of clubs coming down think that it's going to be a walk in the park. And I think very quickly they realise that it's not if anyone does. Obviously we see Scunthorpe come down and they've gone down again from last season, haven't they? I think there's, as you say, the profile, the fact that people have seen it so much and the visibility of the league is so much greater than it's ever been. I think people and fans of teams who are coming down do sort of understand a bit more what they're kind of coming into, and as I say, if they don't, they soon do realise.
Yeah, and yeah, I wish Jimmy McNulty well, and I look forward to speaking to him. But you mentioned Scunthorpe. I did see an interview with Jimmy McNulty this week saying, well, he mentioned his former boss Keith Hill, that he was one of the first people that had said to him that he knew he'd make a great manager, which is always great to hear. But Keith Hill was obviously the man that lasted, I think, a month in the National League when he first came down with Scunthorpe United last season, or season just finishing.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's it. I'm sure he knows the club. He's been around it for a long time. Jimmy, and he'll have his ideas, I think it's important to have
those fans with you as well, particularly
when you go, especially at the beginning.
It's a bit like going into a party. It's always better if you've got someone alongside you that you know as your mate to hold your hand, isn't it? As well as the National League, we also had the playoffs for the South and the North. Oxford City reaching the top tier of non-league with victory. Well, a convincing victory, wasn't it? 4-0 over St Albans. And in the North, very pleasing for last week's guest, Russ Penn, seeing his Kidderminster Harriers side beat Brackley Town 2-0 to go back to the top tier. As you say, it's going to be an interesting National League next season. Maybe a slightly more of a level playing field. But it'll be essential for whatever club you are to get off to a very good start.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, very pleased for Russ Penn. It's kind of one of those strange ones from a reporter's point of view last week. He's got a lot of time for Gaz Dean, who's obviously interim manager at Bradley. Yeah, I've spoken to Gaz Dean many times over the years, and you know, he's always been a fascinating guy to chat to. And he's kind of found himself as interim manager for Bradley for a brief period of time at the end of the year. Obviously, Gav Cowan's now got the job, and I think, as always said, he sees himself as a player. But you would have been pleased for him to go up, because you know what it meant to him. But at the same time, for Rust, you know, see last season, such a fantastic year, their FA Cup run, and it just didn't happen for him in the playoffs. And kind of this year, it's gone the other way around, where they've kind of been a bit up and down, but hit form perfect at the end of the season and gone into the playoffs really hot. And they've got up, and it's great to see you know, Kiddy back in on the top flight. You know, such a club that, you know, anyone who's been there, I think, sort of enjoys it going there. And they're such a sort of big sort of non-league name, aren't they? So great to see them up. And then, as you say, on the flip side, you've got Oxford City coming up for the first time ever. And I spoke to our manager, Ross Jenkins, earlier this week, and he's obviously going to be coming from one of the smallest budgets and part time, but looking forward to that challenge of going up against non-league heavyweights. So fantastic win for them in the playoffs. I mean, you know, it's funny, these playoff games, we always talk about how tight they're going to be and how edgy first sort of 20 minutes, first half can so often be. And they've obviously found themselves falling off at half-time, and kind of the perfect performance, that all that hard work that goes in all pays off right at the moment when it happens. So fantastic result for them, and a brand new adventure for them to be taking on next season.
Yeah, and so we really do reach the end of the football action this weekend. An apt, I think, that it is the non-league finals day at Wembley. Two great games ahead. We've got Newport Pagnell Town taking on Ascot United in the 12:15 kickoff for the FA Vars, and then 4:15 FC Halifax Town against Gateshead in the FA Trophy final. If you have the opportunity to get there, it is one of the best days in football. It looks like it's going to be sunny as well.
Well, sun and a bit of warmth is the key thing. I know, as we've often said on here, we don't want a repeat of the other year when it was the Concord Rangers final, when we were both sat shivering at the back of that stand, weren't we?
It made the play look a lot more dramatic when you were shaking like that.
I had two coats on. Literally had two coats on. Two coats, my face mask, and my hood pulled down. And I feel we've earned a nice day in the sun at Wembley, and the players of the four teams and fans certainly have what a great occasion it's going to be. And so that sort of excitement building up to this brilliant showpiece afternoon. I know you'll be there early for the breakfast in the media centre as well, so there's that to look forward to. But hopefully two great games as well. And Vars is always tends to serve up a thriller, doesn't it? And the Halifax Gateshead one's a tough call, both in good form towards the end of the season. Had a bit of a break now, and all to play for on Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because for those sides that haven't played competitive football for a couple of weeks, they'll have behind the closed doors friendlies and all that sort of thing. Not quite the same. And then the next game you play is in front of a large crowd at Wembley.
Yeah, I was talking to a couple of the Ascot lads this week, Harry Grant and Alfie Grant, brothers, who will be going out onto the Hallow Turf together. And Harry's kind of saying it has been a strange couple of weeks, because they finished their season, everyone else sort of in their league, and all their bulk of their mates are off on their holidays, having a rest, and they've kind of been training the last few weeks, but you know, not of a game at the weekend with this sort of huge occasion kind of on the horizon. And now it's here. I know this week they've been training at Bisham Abbey, and they, I think last night they're training at the Medeski Stadium, and so they've had a, you know, building up right to this big occasion now, and finally here. But I guess it will be strange for them, because they've all known about it for such a long time now, and it's finally arriving, and all those little aches and pains, I'm sure, will drift away as soon as they wake up on Sunday morning. They get ready to play in one of the best stadiums in the country.
Yeah, we've already heard about the availability issues that Gateshead are facing, but I'm sure it's going to be one of those. Anybody's got Dave Anderson always talks about this for a big game. If anyone's got a little niggle, they're suddenly available. That little niggle just sort of passes by, and you can get through for one more game. One thing I was thinking...
I think I'll take my boots with me then if the gates are short. I mean, I never know. They need a ball playing right back.
Yeah, well, I think you'd fall foul of the rules in relation to when you needed to be signed on in time, but ahead of the semi-final. I think it's always some red tape. We'll come to that later. But one thing, I listened to the radio debate this week. Last night, we're talking on Thursday, on Wednesday evening, about the Championship playoff final. Formerly of our number, very recently, Luton Town taking on Coventry City in that Championship playoff final, and it occurred to me that they're talking about clubs that have gone through turmoil and sort of, you know, really faced hard times that are now one step away from the Premier League. And similarly for the two sides that are in the trophy final, we have FC Halifax Town and Gates have both had their own turmoil. So turmoil teams. And I just wonder whether these clubs that have been through the ringer and come out the other side are maybe wiser, maybe stronger. A similar tale too, I guess, with Wrexham and Notts County, where they've, you know, are on the edge, but new owners have come in and sort of seen them. I wonder if, as we came out of COVID and into this economic strife that clubs are and everybody's facing, that maybe those clubs who've already faced the abyss before are actually better placed to deal and get on in adversity, and that's why we're seeing them being the successful ones this season.
Yeah, definitely. I always think the lows make the highs in football as well. I don't know, it makes you appreciate them more when they come along. And as you say, you know, think about Gateshead and how sort of difficult that situation was a few years ago, and booted out of step one, and real sort of question marks, and kind of they got together, fans have saved them, and you know, we talked about that a few weeks ago, didn't we, about Wrexham, and you know, obviously everyone knows about this sort of current story with the owners who came in, and you know, obviously that kind of gets a stick to beat them with, but people forget about how not all that long ago their fans saved them and you know, stood up for their club and fought for their club. And you know, Luton, similar story from how they came into non-league and all the sort of the issues that they'd had. And you know, it took them a while to get back out. I think it's four seasons. There's 1 year they lost two playoff finals. 1 year they didn't even get in the playoffs, and then they've gone up as champions. And just look at them now. I mean, incredible story. I was watching that game the other night and thinking, look at Kenilworth Road and sort of reporting on countless games from there, and you know, how that ground always shook even back then, even when they were, when the one night against Oxford United, and they scored a Keith Keane, I think it was, scored a late winner from a straight direct from a corner. And, you know, you felt like the whole place was going to tumble down because everyone was jumping around so much. But just kind of an amazing story. And yeah, fascinating to see who comes through on that one. But I think from a sort of with a non-league hat on, it would be amazing to see Luton. And obviously our old friend Stuart Hammonds, who's so many years at the paper, is obviously working at Luton these days, and no doubt he'll enjoy producing a few programmes in the Premier League next season if they can get that.
Yeah, how the sliding door moments, how things can change. We have got fewer games this season, and no less debate though, and news and issues plenty to report this week. We've also seen another HMRC winding up petition at Southend United. That's been put back for another, I think, 56 days until July, which, you know, talking about clubs that have come back from the brink, maybe that gives a bit of hope for the Southend United fans and that. But however you see it, it's going to be unsettling for all involved at the club that this again rolls on now until effectively the middle of July.
Yeah, it keeps rolling on and rolling on, doesn't it? I saw a tweet from Chris Phillips, who does brilliant work covering them for the local paper, and he sort of said there was a brief moment. He was at the hearing the other day, so there was a brief moment where he kind of wondered which way it might go, and he said it was just horrible kind of being there and seeing it, and hearing, you know, that kind of waver about what might happen. It keeps getting pushed down the line. Eventually it needs to be sorted out, and I mean, you know, the fans, it's been you know, really, really tough and dreadful for them, really, to, you know, to sort of go through this time and time again, and something does need to get sorted. I would imagine that the authorities is keeping a very, very close eye on it, because I don't see how it can keep going on. They can't go through another season as they just have. It's just not sustainable. So something needs to be done about it. And hopefully for the fans, it will be done, and it'll be a positive resolution as kind of soon as possible. But it's certainly a very, very messy situation still.
Yeah, and talking about unsettling, that you mentioned there's some involved in non-league football. They're off on their holiday. They're on the beach enjoying cocktails or whatever. But issues of club
not us.
No. One day maybe. We've got the issues of club allocations this week, and you can never please everybody. But I don't think fate was kind in the spread of clubs relegated from almost all levels at the end of last season. But it does seem a lot of dissent, and I think the number of clubs publicly announcing appeals to the FA, certainly in double figures, is probably going to be more doing the same discreetly as a number of sort of lateral movements across from divisions and even leagues as well. I look at it though, and I'm not sure, short of having a magic wand, what could have been done. I think I do wonder where it's all going to end, particularly for those appealing. You know, have they got better alternatives to the allocations that they can realistically come up with?
Yeah, I think that's going to be key to any of the appeals. You know, it's not just we're not happy, but there has to be alternatives, isn't it? And this is the thing, an alternative is going to affect somebody else as well, potentially. So. Unless there's kind of mutual things we have seen in the past.
Yeah, and one of those situations is obviously Met Police asking for voluntary relegation, but that was unknown until these allocations came out, which in a sort of has reprieved Harrah-Burra, but I'm sure they've probably thought about how they're going to budget. They've appointed a new manager based on the expectation that they were going to be in step four and not step three. So every decision affects somebody else, and you know there's been a big group of informed people at the FA, whatever you think of them, that they've not done it to upset anybody. They've done it to try and come up with a sensible solution. And you know, I think since Christmas we've been looking at Bishop Stortford inevitably going back to the National North if they got promoted, and the club's been discussing it too whenever they've been questioned, and they did get promoted and they have been allocated to National North, but now I think they're going to appeal about their placement. And ironically, I think their long away day to Blyth Spartans is actually shorter than the long away trip to Truro at Plymouth would be if they won their appeal and ended up in National South. So I love the fact that we always have a right to appeal, but is it always right to appeal? And I think that's the question that football might need to ask itself.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, you could sort of kind of see, as you say, you know, it's lots of sliding doors things. If Gateshead didn't go on a great run, at one point it looks like Gateshead were going down, didn't it?
Yeah.
They go on a great run, keep out of it. 3 southern clubs go down, Oxford City go up. Whether that would have made a difference, don't know. Maybe Stortford would still be in the National League North anyway, but it was kind of falling that way anyway. Yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, you know, as you say, they were in it before. I know it's not great for them. There's obviously, yes, there's those that long trip to Truro and some other place in the National League South. I suppose they are going to be, you know, pretty much every away trip is going to be a long one. There's no real derby now. So, you know, even with Kettering getting relegated, they sort of take another one that's sort of a little bit nearer as well. Off them, obviously, you know, you're looking at the transport links as well, the fact they're right bang on the M11, sure that would come into it. And, you know, going south, you do have to deal with the M25 and stuff like that. So that's, you know, I think it's difficult for everybody involved, isn't it? Because, you know, Stortford have kind of been unlucky in the sense that that's how it's fallen. The FA certainly wouldn't be making this decision, you know, lightly and just for the sake of it, because they think, oh, you know, let's just stick them in there, that'll be fine, and then we can all just get off on holiday ourselves, because that's just not the way they think. You know, I know those guys there and how much sort of goes into it and what they do and how much care they take over their work. So it's kind of one of those situations where you have to work into a framework, and the framework is as it is. You can't start, you know, if you change something, then what happens next season if 4 National League North clubs get relegated? Mm. You sort of switch it around again. When, you know, it's very, there's all these part of the restructuring that's happened recently, and there has been some sort of possibly some unintended consequences that come from that. And I think the FA is sort of looking at those and they're aware of those. There's been sort of talk about stuff in the West. Obviously, there's some things going on in the Northwest as well now, where lots are coming down from the NPL West and sort of pushing different boundaries. And but I think the way the FA have sort of said it and always seen it is, you know, a club has a contract with a league for 12 months. A 12-month contract is kind of how they put it. And at the end of that 12 months, everything can be completely different. You know, you look at the National League recently and how many Northern clubs have been getting promoted in the last few years. And you think really in the last six or seven, maybe eight, it's probably only been Sutton really, isn't it? So from the South. And, you know, it's kind of, there's lots of things out of control of who, you know, how it can all change in one game, one result right at the end of the season on the final day that sort of causes a domino effect everywhere else. And yeah, I think the problem is that the country is not a perfect shape that can be divided up equally. There's always going to be people, clubs on the out, you know, who are the furthest away. Do feel for Stoke, but it's going to potentially make, you know, some of their players rethink where they want to play, and that's obviously going to cause them issues there. But I do find it a little bit interesting that kind of people who, when we're sort of more casual observers of non-league, sort of, you know, and see things like this, like jumping up and down all over social media and kind of sort of, you know, having a pop at everybody and coming up with all these bright ideas. But, you know, what are you going to do? But this sort of, something we're talking about going back to three leagues at that level. Well, what are you going to have, six teams come down from the National League? You can't relegate
that's really the difficulty, isn't it, when you're in those national leagues. You've got to have a great start because of the number that are already going, being relegated, how big those relegation spots are. And if you increase that, I'm not sure if that then takes away the competitiveness, because are you more likely then to have clubs that are going to be stranded earlier on in the season than have nothing to play for, and then does that have an impact on the whole of the table and the rest of the fixtures that are due to be played?
Yeah, you can't go to just, okay, we'll go back to having just three teams relegated next year, because then you're going to only have one team up from these new three step two divisions that some people seem to be proposing. And then that doesn't, you know, then you're stifling promotion that way. So, there's lots of, I think we said before, we could all sit and debate. You could debate it for hours and come up with all sorts of different ways. But the way the sort of framework is at the moment, unfortunately, there's going to be, you know, and situations like this have occurred. Another Northern club had gone down, it had been an even split, then the conversation would be being had, would it? So, you know, it's not to say that these conversations shouldn't be had generally, but I just think it's a difficult situation. And, you know, as you say, Stoke will have their right to appeal, and maybe it will be successful. Don't blame them. I do feel for them, because, you know, it's kind of not their fault that they've had a great season, and the teams that have been rubbish above them have all been in the South. So, difficult situation. And so, I mean, how long have you been doing this? How long have I been doing this? I don't know. There's never been a season where everybody's gone, oh, that's great. Because there's just always going to be different. You can't please everybody.
I have to say, on a positive note, it is nice that how organised the FA is on this now. And it does show that the care and the attention that goes into it. You know, before it was almost like a series of yogurt pots and a few bits of string, where you'd hear, you know, the rumours as to what was happening or how it was happening. We get a nice, you know, fully colour coded allocation system. You can, and with that, you can almost hear the debate going on behind closed doors as to how they arrived at those decisions. So it is. These debates can't be had in an open chamber, obviously, but it is a lot more transparent than ever it was. And there isn't ever going to be a perfect solution. And that's football, and that's life.
Yeah, and I think I've done pieces with the guys at the FA over the years, and sometimes, you know, so we wish to sort of get more, you know, people remember more people sort of reading from when times come around like this, because they sort of often do explain away sort of decisions and make sort of understand why things have to happen and the way it's done, and sort of, you know, often joke themselves, when do you get the then you get the dartboard out in a dart room and just throw darts at a map. You know, it's not, but that is not what they do. They you know, there's a lot of care and a lot, and you know, a lot of love and trying to help clubs. And you know, not everything's going to be perfect. Not everything's going to be right. They're dealing with a massive, you know, system. It's huge. It's so vast, and it covers such a broad church. You know, unfortunately, there's going to be things. And like I say, maybe some of the appeals will be successful, and every club has that right and should exercise that right as well. And I'm sure the guys at the FA would say the same. So it'll be interesting how it comes out. But it's not an easy process at all.
And nothing's easy in non-league football, including being a manager. There's plenty going on the managerial go-around. You mentioned former AFC Telford man Gavin Cowan, the new manager at Brackley Town. We've seen Paul Barnes most recently at Dulwich Hamlet taken over at Hastings United. Richard Brodie has sort of stepped across from Skelmersdale United over to Bursker to take on the role there. Steve Lovell's back in the game from after leaving... departing Ramsgate in January, returns to management at Herne Bay. And another story I saw was that the Beaconsfield pairing was so successful at Slough Town, John Underwood and Neil Baker, that has been unlinked. Neil Baker's going to be stepping back from the role John Underwood taking on the first team manager on his own with support from coaching staff, of course. I mentioned this to John Couch last week. It's a difficult time. What with these allocations, trying to work out who's going to be in what division, who's going to be what manager's going to be where and when. There's so much going on. I think fans don't often understand that it's called the close season. But for anybody that's actually involved in a football club or involved in football media, this is probably the busiest time of the season of the whole of the year.
Yeah, it never stops, and that's all part of the fun of it, I suppose, as well. It keeps us interested. Maybe another sport captivates us and keeps us fully locked in 365 days of the year. And the big breaking news as we speak is that Mark Stimpson's back in management at Grays Athletic, where he had so much success, won his FA trophies, and I'm sure they'll be very, very happy to have got Stimmo back in there after departing Hornchurch last week. A manager who's been there, done it, won it, and going in at Grays. Obviously, they got to the Isthmian North semi-finals last season. Or season just gone. When do we go? Called last season. This is what I always get confused.
Yeah, when is it
off-season, close-season debate is. Are we still in this season? Is it last season? When's next season?
I always look at it as the 30th of June is the cutoff point for my season.
So we're still in this. Well, I say this is still this season because we've still got the non-league finals day, and then we sort of get into that murky kind of territory. You know, these are the big problems that people don't realise that we have to think about.
Yeah, lots to think about, including reporting this weekend's paper. I guess for once, not an embattled Saturday night trying to pull it all together, but still a paper to get out nonetheless, and an event to organise as well. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Well, as we said, the allocations are all in there, and the beautiful colour coding from the FA, that's all in there as well. Your laterals, your reprieves, your ups, your downs, your new clubs. So you're seeing Harlow come back in, Drawson come back in, those names back into the system as well. So reaction to that, full previews of non-league finals day. As I mentioned earlier, I spoke to the Grant brothers. Ascot is a really interesting and good fun chat, kind of going over all kind of things about how many tickets they've got. A coach load of family leaving at 9 a.m. to get up to Wembley on Sunday morning, and their uncle Martin Allen, and how much influence he's kind of had on them through the years, and the winning mentality instilled at them over games at Christmas and all this kind of stuff. So plenty in there from that point of view. We've got reaction to Kiddies' win in the National League North playoffs and Oxford City's as well, obviously. And then we've got a piece of Mark Duffy, who's become Macclesfield manager. He's been in there a couple of years. Not that long ago, he's winning promotion to the Premier League as a player of Sheffield United. And he's been at Mac the last couple of years. Now with Neil Dunn's going in that Tranmere, he's kind of got the... been handed the managerial keys for their undoubted promote or title charge that they're going to be attempting in step three next season. So great chat with him, and lots of other interesting bits that are going on the manager reaction, and yeah, just looking forward to another quieter Saturday night, but a busy Sunday, and then into a new week as the season fully winds down and we have our national game awards next week, and then we can draw a line and all go on holiday for a bit.
Maybe. Matt Badcock.
Well, I wish.
Thanks again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We look forward to reading the paper on Sunday.
Thanks, Tim, and I'll see you Sunday.
That then is it for now. Certainly that's it for this pod. With a bit of luck, as previously explained, and hopefully a following win, there will be an extra pod out Friday afternoon with some additional content ahead of this weekend's non-league finals day. So please keep an eye out on social media or your podcast inbox if you subscribe via an aggregator. Hopefully it'll pop up there as well. So thank you to all of my guests so far, as ever, and thank you for everybody for listening. As I did mention at the opening, there are moves afoot for some changes for the new season. Very exciting changes and partnerships coming up, and hopefully will be good for everybody's listening experience. Again, if you've got any ideas or anything you'd like us to cover in future episodes of the Non-League Football Show, please do get in touch. You can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Myself, I'm there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. So good luck for those involved in non-league finals day. If you are travelling, please do have a safe journey and an enjoyable day out, and stay safe. Enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber production. J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.